Welcome back to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm your host, Graham Richmond, and I'm joined, as I am every week, by Alex Brown. Alex, welcome back. How are you doing?
Very good, Graham. Looking forward to this edition of Wiretaps.
Yeah, so we're under the gun here because there's just so much to tackle this week. There's been a lot of activity on Livewire, as our listeners know. It's, you know, full-on admission season now, and so schools like Tepper getting invites out. There was some Darden early decisions, some things with Kellogg. So let's sort of talk about that stuff before we get into our usual breaking down of kind of four ApplyWire entries, four candidate profiles. So Alex, yeah, what's been, you're on the front lines, you know, reading all these Livewire entries. What's been going on over the last week? Because it's been pretty crazy.
Yeah, it's been very good. Lots of activity. I was surprised to see on Monday morning we got some interview invites from Tepper, which is quite impressive. Their deadline was actually on the Sunday.
Yeah.
So they obviously have some process in place to get at least a few of their interview invites right out the door. So kudos to Tepper for doing that. Darden has been the sort of biggest news of the week thus far. We are actually, as we're recording, I think we're waiting for London Business School interview invites because we record this 2 or 3 days before it goes live. So hopefully they went out Thursday. But Darden released its early decision, final decisions this week. So candidates were either admitted, which is fantastic, denied, or placed on the wait list. So I thought it'd be a good chance, Graham, to chat a little bit about waitlist strategy in the case of a school like Darden. And we chatted about this a little bit before we came on air. We reckon that people fall into three buckets if they're placed on the waitlist, right? Did you want to go through each of those buckets?
Yeah, I think, I mean, if someone's placed on the waitlist, you know, I mean, first of all, I just want to encourage people who are waitlisted because in this stage of the season, getting on a waitlist, your odds of actually getting off that waitlist are much greater than if you were waitlisted in the spring or something, right? Because there's still lots of time. So, but in terms of these three groups, I think, you know, there's the group of folks who have something that they need to address in their profile. So maybe you have a low test score or, you know, just something that's missing, poor goals, whatever it might be. That would be one group. And the nice thing is that Darden allows people to get feedback. So you can actually reach out and apparently get some feedback from them and then set about addressing, you know, whatever it is that they highlight. The second group, I would say, are the kind of maybe overqualified or people with great numbers. Everything seems to line up, but maybe they didn't do a great job of selling the school and their interest in Darden's, you know, specific program, which is a very unique program, you know, due to its use of the case method and you know, its setting. So I think there could be a group that's, you know, certainly qualified, but maybe didn't do a great job of convincing the admissions team that they really want to be at Darden. And then there is a final group, which might just be folks who they sort of meet the qualifications, but they're not really superstars. And it could be that the admissions team at Darden is saying, you know, these people might be good contributors, but let's just hang on to them and see what we get in the remaining rounds. And we'll kind of go back and revisit. And that happens at all top schools. People are waitlisted and, you know, the committee wants some time to sort of say, okay, what is the caliber of this year's applicant pool? And are these people admits or are they going to actually be right on the bubble? And so that, I think that's some of what's happening too.
Yeah, and oftentimes, I'm not exactly sure of Darden's process, but those on the waitlist will then be measured again against the round one applicant pool and then the round two applicant pool and so on and so forth. So I would imagine the next set of decisions that they'll hear from the waitlist will be when those round one decisions are released, which actually is not too far away in the case of Darden. And, you know, the last couple of years, the applicant pools have shrunk a little bit. And if they're shrinking again this season, that behooves, you know, that's very good for people early on the wait list, as Graham mentioned. Additionally, there was a little bit of noise on Livewire regarding Kellogg. So Kellogg seems to have reached out to a portion of its applicant pool, those that applied in round one, to set up a phone call with ADCOM, someone in ADCOM, just to sort of help that person learn more about the program, get the questions answered, and so on and so forth. So Kellogg is one for doing these, I would say, a little bit unorthodox sort of tactics, as it were, in the admissions process. And this is new this season. I don't remember Kellogg doing this last year. Do you, Graham?
No, this is new. And I think it's, I mean, you know, on some levels, it sort of corresponds with their, you know, kind of community team very friendly kind of environment, and maybe they're just trying to provide that sort of concierge level, you know, service to candidates. But it is interesting, and I think I kind of wondered, is this a way to feel out some candidates and get a sense of them via a short phone call before they kind of have to make an admissions decision? Or is it really purely just, hey, let's provide great customer service and connect with each and every applicant, and or at least the really top tier applicants that we're kind of interested in, and give them that extra, you know, kind of Kellogg love? So I don't know what it is, but it is new and it's been picked up on Livewire, which is great. I mean, that's why the tool exists. So pretty interesting stuff.
Well, one of the candidates did report back on their experience with the phone call. So, you know, people can head over to Livewire and check that out. It seemed like it was a pretty straightforward phone call and quite laid back and quite enjoyable.
So I know folks want us to get into the profile assessments that we're going to do for four ApplyWire candidates, but I did want to mention that we had a VisitWire entry, which I don't know if our listeners are super familiar with VisitWire. It's a newer tool on the site that allows people to just share a campus visit experience and provide guidance, even down to like where you stayed, where you ate, how easy it is to get to the campus, but also what things there are to do on campus, you know, visiting a class or recommendations. So we had an entry come in there. So obviously, to the extent that you're listening and if you visited an MBA campus, please contribute to VisitWire. It takes all of like 5 minutes to throw in an entry or two. So and then the last thing is we've started to see some activity on DecisionWire as some candidates reach the end of the admissions process, particularly those applying early, you know, to places like Darden or, you know, getting early decision with Columbia, et cetera. So, yeah, stay tuned there. There'll be more, you know, as the season moves forward, all these different wires on the site, you know, become more active. So anything else, though, Alex, before we dive in and start talking about this week's candidates?
Yeah, that DecisionWire entry is actually very interesting. And I've actually, Graham, I know, is going to chime in directly on DecisionWire to help the candidate. But it's, you know, the person's admitted to both Darden and Columbia. And you would think, you know, off the cuff, you know, straight away, you think, well, Columbia is a little higher profile, a lot of people would think, not necessarily. But then, you know, it's an international student. Darden presents this sort of STEM alternative that provides them 3 years of practical training or employment within the US. So that changes the dynamic. So I'm really looking forward, Graham, to see your feedback, and then obviously I'll build from that. And yeah, I think hopefully that sort of back and forth will help some other candidates think through this stuff too.
Yeah, so definitely check out what we have to say, because that is not a clear-cut choice, right? So, all right, without further ado, let's move into our wiretaps assessments. Once again, Alex has selected four very interesting candidates from ApplyWire, and let's get into ApplyWire candidate number one. So this person has been working in kind of accounting and also nonprofit. They want to make a switch over to consulting, but ideally kind of with an eye, again, in the nonprofit sector, targeting Accenture, A.T. Kearney, Deloitte, GRE score 323, GPA of 3.81, and 5 years of work experience. This person is located in Philadelphia, where ClearAdmit is headquartered, so come on and say hi sometime, come by and say hello sometime. And the post-MBA target in terms of a location, this person's totally has no preference. Schools that they're looking at are Tepper, Cornell, Georgetown, Notre Dame, Penn State, and UNC Kenan Flagler. I did want to mention this person also has some pretty interesting outside activities, including, you know, they've umpired like over 100 youth baseball games. They've been an SAT tutor for a couple of years. And they've also been doing horseback riding lessons to children with disabilities, which Alex, for our listeners may not know this, but Alex is a big horse rider and used to do training for racehorses and things. So that probably resonated with you, Alex. I see you mentioned that in the comments. So yeah, what do you think of this guy? I mean, it's kind of an interesting case, you know, in terms of, you know, he actually mentioned that he wondered if we might feature this profile because he's sort of like, I'm average white guy, you know, and I'm wondering, like, do I stand out? Am I applying to the right schools? So what do you think of this guy?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is actually quite an interesting case for us to discuss. And quite honestly, Graham, I'm going to throw it directly back to you. sorry for that. But here's a guy who went to not a premium school. I think he said some Philadelphia area
public university, and he gave us a hint. I actually think it's probably Temple, if I had to guess, but that gives people an idea. Yeah.
Could well be Temple. But got a 381.
Yeah.
In finance and accounting. So my impression there is he did well with the experiences that he had. Went into accounting and then into auditing. Big Four accounting, then auditing. So I'm guessing, Graham, recruiting out of, let's say it's Temple, and again, I don't know that we know that, but if it's Temple, I'm guessing he probably recruited quite well. In terms of the opportunities going out of Temple versus, let's say, the opportunities coming out of Wharton or one of the top schools, right? So goes into Big Four accounting, then transitions into internal auditing, which on the face of it, you don't think is the sexiest sort of roles to have had for a pre-MBA. And this is what the guy admits: I'm the average white guy. Throwing it back to you, Graham, how does the average white guy go about standing out in the admissions process? What sort of things should he be thinking of highlighting?
Yeah, so I actually I like this candidate, and I think this candidate is not aiming high enough. And the reason is that, there are a few things. So the first thing that I noted is that he's got these pretty incredible outside activities. So, you know, he's umpiring Little League. He's helping disabled kids learn to horseback ride. He's doing some SAT tutoring, although that's probably a paid role. But I just think he's really an active person in his community. And so right there, I don't actually lump him into the general kind of, you know, banker guy that's working 80 hours a week and has no time for anything else except maybe his Xbox or something, right? So I think this guy has more to offer than he may be giving himself credit for. As you said, GPA is solid. He studied business stuff undergrad. It's, you know, if it's Temple, it's still a decent school. It's not like he, you know, went to some unknown institution. The thing that jumped out at me is that he's doing auditing, internal auditing for a nonprofit healthcare organization. And the first thing I thought of is, wow, you know, his career goals are to move over to kind of strategy consulting. And he has reasonable firms that he's targeting and such. But I sort of wondered, you know, could there be more focus here on the goals? Does he like healthcare? You know, he's working in kind of a nonprofit healthcare role. Is that something that he's gotten sort of interested in? Because if that's the case, then all of a sudden, you know, he could present a candidacy where, look, I've been crunching the numbers in a healthcare domain, and I want to move just over to healthcare entirely on the strategy side. And, you know, then suddenly Duke and Kellogg and Wharton, who all have really fantastic healthcare offerings, they come in, they will be in play. Now, granted, his GRE score of 323, it's actually, I looked at the percentiles, it's right down the middle, 85th percentile math and 85th percentile verbal. So he's, you know, he's in the running. I mean, it's not a 327 or, you know, it's probably a point or two shy of the average GRE score at some of the top schools. But, you know, you look at his GPA, you look at his outside activities, and if he had a good set of goals, that had an industry focus to them, I could see this guy reaching much higher than where he's currently looking. So that's my take. I don't know if you agree.
Yeah, I mean, my feedback directly on the site was I think he should be looking at more, one or two more, at least top 16 programs. Duke, I think, is an obvious one in the regard that if he does have some passion for the healthcare industry. And I also suggested, or at least I wrote it in my notes for Wiretaps, what is the long-term goal? So again, I think you hit that. Like a lot of people, they talk about their goals going to business school is to come out into strategy consulting, which is all very good. But more often than not, candidates will leave consulting after a period of time and move back into industry to get closer to their long-term goals. So if this candidate's going down that path, let's hear more about that long-term ambition, and that should then anchor everything else in the candidacy. Like you, obviously, I really like the extracurricular activities as a horseman myself, who has also volunteered at a disabled riding facility closer to actually down in Pennsylvania, where I live. Actually, it's probably quite close to where this person is. But so obviously I have a little bit of a bias there. But like you, I think the guy does stuff outside of work. I think his impression, Graham, and maybe you could just address this head on, is, you know, I did accounting, I did auditing, I didn't do investment banking. Therefore, I'm not of that caliber.
Yeah, and I disagree. I mean, both you and I worked in admissions at Wharton, and we've been in this space for so long. We see plenty of Big Four and audit, and, you know, there are a lot of candidates like this in the pool. I think this guy's underestimating his potential. The only thing that did jump out at me, and I want to just mention, is that if he's working as an SAT tutor or has worked in the past as an SAT tutor, part of me thought, well, wait a second, how is he not like hitting the GRE completely out of the park in terms of the score? So that did kind of cross my mind, and I wondered, you know, gee, does it make sense to go back and sit the test again and try to get a little bit higher score that would really open some doors? But again, I think he could get in with the current score, but it just something to mention. Anything else on this guy? Again, I really appreciate him posting. I agree that it's a good candidacy to talk about because it may appear on the surface as somewhat pedestrian, you know, a really common profile, et cetera. So happy to have featured that.
Yeah, I would just say, I don't know when the person's applying, but spread some apps around round one and round two. And if you know, he thinks he can improve that GRE score, then you've got a couple of months to have one more crack at him. So yeah, overall, I think a more interesting candidate than the candidate gives himself credit for, and certainly should be a little bit more ambitious in some of these, some of the school selection maybe.
Yep. So let's move on to Wiretap's candidate number two. So this person's looking to start business school next fall. They're currently working as a sales consultant and want to make the move over to sort of traditional consulting, targeting A.T. Kearney, Bain, Ernst & Young, and McKinsey. GMAT score is 730. GPA is a 3.32. This person has worked for 4 years, currently located in London in the United Kingdom. And post-MBA is hoping to actually come and be in New York, probably New York City, I'm guessing. They say New York. So one thing I did want to mention about this candidate is they had a very important question about how salespeople are seen by admissions team members. And we've discussed that a bit on the podcast before, and we'll get into that in a moment. But the other thing that was quite touching to hear is they said, I've been listening to Wiretaps whilst going to work every time there's a new episode, and I would be honored to be featured if you deem it necessary. So we've deemed it necessary. I think this is actually an interesting case. And Alex, I'll turn it over to you. What do you make of this candidate?
Yeah, I mean, again, this candidate, like the first candidate, is concerned about a particular issue and how that represents into the admissions process. The guy's a salesman, but you know, they're building territories, they're representing, I guess, US companies in Europe, trying to build sales territories for those companies. So to the extent that he can show real success doing that, and he's developing market entry strategies and so some other strategic stuff for these companies, I think playing that up in the admissions process is going to be useful. Also, to the extent that he's based in London, an American based in London, working across Europe. So that adds, I think, a dimension to the candidacy.
Do you think he's American? I thought he might be British, actually, just based on the way he spelled honored. I thought maybe he might be British.
Oh, wow.
So I think he might
be. So I misinterpreted that. So I would then say, well, if you're English, you've got a leg up. Oh, no, I'm kidding.
Well, actually, though, it's an interesting point, Alex, because I think one thing I hear over and over again when I talk with admissions directors is that the European market is not what it used to be, that they want more candidates from Europe. And I think some of that's because there are obviously a lot of great MBA offerings in Europe. And so the candidate pool of, you know, people looking at American programs from, say, the UK or France or other EU countries, well, I guess I can't always I can't say EU for long, but they, you know, that pool is small. And so I think he does have a leg up just by the sheer fact of being a British candidate. So that is, I did want to mention that.
Yeah. So either way, if the candidate's British, there's opportunity there, because that makes them part of an underrepresented group. If the candidate's American in the UK working in Europe, I think that too is an advantage, in as much as, you know, they've left the US, they're doing things in a different environment, different cultures and and so forth. So I think either way is a positive. So I think, you know, adding to all that, Graham, the strong GMAT, 730.
Frankly, the GPA I was a little curious about, because he's given the GPA on kind of a U.S. Scale, a 3.32. And I wondered, is this a U.S. undergraduate experience or was it a U.K., in which case he might be, is this kind of a, you know, second class honors type result? I don't really know how to map the GPA in terms of first class honors, second class honors, the way that they do things in the UK, over to a kind of American system. But either way, if it's a 3.32, it is a bit low. Probably want to address it. I think, you know, but when push comes to shove, I would want this guy to focus on, you know, not the cold calling, as he refers to in his, you know, message here, but more on just his, you know, what he's learned in helping these companies to kind of, U.S. companies break into the European market, and the kind of strategy side of it, that will help. And then the other thing, though, that I would like would be for there to be more depth with his goals. So some kind of industry focus or a cause, like I presume he's helped a whole bunch of different companies enter, you know, the EU and kind of European market. And you know, just there must be something that's piqued his interest over time. Because right now, all I'm really hearing is, I want to move over to kind of strategy and consulting. And I think his goals would be more interesting if there was something, you know, oh, one company I helped was a tech company, and I'm really interested in that, and I want to do, you know, technology consulting or something that just would help us to grab on, you know, to that would make him more unique. And I also, he didn't really touch on, if memory serves, at least he didn't touch on sort of what he does outside of work. And while Europeans get a little bit of a pass on that, because it's not as common to have big extracurriculars as it might be in the US, he's going to need to show that he's well-rounded. So there's got to be things, I mean, he must be doing something, whether it's running or cycling, or, you know, he must have a passion, you know, film noir, or I don't know what it is, but like he needs to bring that stuff to the fore as well, because, you know, all the schools want well-rounded candidates. And, you know, I realize we didn't talk about his targets, and his targets are, he's got, you know, Berkeley, Cornell, Duke, Michigan, Kellogg, Chicago, UCLA, and Yale. So he sort of has, you know, some M7 and some kind of top 15, top 16 schools. I think he's probably fishing in the right pond, but I think he's going to need to, you know, do a good job with his applications to get into these programs.
Yeah, I mean, right now the goal for getting the MBA is clearly to get into strategy consulting. But as you say, it would be good, again, just like the first candidates, have a long-term ambition and anchor things to that, to the extent that they can. But yeah, I completely agree on the extracurricular side. We don't have any insight into that, but that helps sort of colour the candidate a little bit more. At the end of the day, though, I think the key question is, the guys in sales, is that an automatic strike against? And the answer to that is, it depends how you articulate your experiences, the impact that you've had through those experiences, and so on and so forth. So if you come across to someone that's just been cold calling to build up a target list of whatever, then that's probably not going to be useful to you in the admissions process. But that does not seem to be the case with this candidate.
Yep. Agreed. And I just want to thank that person for sharing, as we always appreciate everyone sharing, and hopefully you're enjoying this podcast on your way to work, as you mentioned, yes. Somewhere in London. So let's move on to Wiretap's candidate number 3. So this person wants to start, it sounds like they indicated 2021, so it sounds like they still have a year to kind of plot out their strategy. They're currently working in banking, hoping to move out of banking and maybe into marketing post-MBA. GPA of 3.2, currently has 2 years of work experience, but again, will be applying to business school with three. Currently in New York City, and this person is looking at Tepper, Duke, Georgetown, Harvard, Kellogg, Stern, Stanford, and Wharton. And that's the long list. I mean, this person has indicated in the comments that they intend to kind of knock that back a bit and hone in on a handful. A couple other tidbits. This person is a Black female, has been working in an analyst program with a bulge bracket, but not in an iBanking role. And they also mentioned that for undergraduate, they went to one of Harvard, Stanford, or Wharton. So that's just so that we have that context. And, you know, they haven't taken the GMAT yet, but they claim they're going to try to hit 730 with a 700 as kind of the absolute minimum. And they also indicated they want to take a statistics course at a local community college in the summer before they apply, and that they intend to get an A there. So any thoughts on this person? They definitely asked a few questions in their comment, and I was just curious for your take on some of this stuff.
Yeah, again, a very interesting candidate. On the younger side, she has 2 years of experience, is going into her third year, I guess, in the analyst program, so will apply after 3 years. So in that case, they're really going to need to justify why now is the right time, because they're a little bit earlier in the process. And that then means she's going to have well-developed goals. So I know she wants to transition into marketing, but perhaps over the next year, really hone in on those goals and develop them and so on and so forth. So I think that would be very good. She obviously quite ambitious about her GMAT score, so fair play getting a 730. It humbles me, Graham, when I took the GMAT, nobody got 730, but of course I'm an old man, so there we go. But yeah, I mean, if she knocks the GMAT out of the ballpark, that would be absolutely fantastic, because her GPA is on the lower end, coming out of a top school, no doubt. And she's got the self-awareness to recognise that she'll take a stats, what do you say, a stats or a calc class, I think stats class, maybe one or two of those kind of classes to really show that she's got, you know, she's academically motivated and that kind of stuff. So the interesting thing, and we chatted about this a little bit again before this podcast, is she was right up front, I'm Black female, right? That was the first thing that she mentioned in the notes. So I wanted to address what this might mean in admission, so that, you know, the audience can get a wider understanding of, you know, how an underrepresented candidate is potentially treated in the admissions process. Because it's not just default, oh, this person's underrepresented candidate, therefore has, you know, 10 more bonus points over other candidates with similar background. I think what's going to be really important for the candidate is to illustrate one of two things, or both simultaneously, right? Firstly, have they had to overcome circumstances to accomplish what they've accomplished today that the average person who's not from an underrepresented minority hasn't had to face those challenges? And that may well be the case with this candidate, although she does signal that she went to either Harvard, Stanford, or Wharton as an undergrad. So it's quite possible that she actually didn't have those sorts of challenges growing up, you know, whether she was first to go to university from a family, or other sort of similar types of challenges, right? So it's hard to say. I'm not saying she didn't, but it could be that she didn't. But there's a second issue here. You know, the potential for her impact in the long run to be a role model and to have impact on other underrepresented minorities from her sort of similar type of background. So that, again, is a value of having someone from an underrepresented background going through your program, going on to be really successful, high impact, can then bring others along that have come from similarly challenging things. So if that's the case, that would be good. But again, she's going to need to show in her background that she has a behavior or a pattern of behavior that she either mentors or does some stuff to help elevate others from her, you know, those sort of underrepresented communities.
And she does have an extracurricular that I didn't mention at the outset, which is she does sports and youth development program for underrepresented minorities. She does ESL tutoring, so English as a second language. She also helps to recruit underrepresented minorities at the current firm where she works. So I think she has a lot of the signs that, you know, she's going to tick that box for being a, you know, potential help in that domain. But I agree with you. I mean, I think, yeah, sometimes, you know, people like to bash and, you know, there's a lot of things, you know, even we've seen it occasionally on our site, but I think it's a pretty nuanced thing here. You know, if you're underrepresented, the way I always like to describe it is, you know, it's not just being an underrepresented minority. It's sometimes being, you know, like from an underrepresented country in the applicant pool or an underrepresented role. Like if you're an admissions officer, you're looking for all these things, you know, so it's not so simple that sometimes people like to sort of just stereotype and make all these judgments. But in any event, I will say that this candidate has, I mean, for me, there's some pros and there's some cons, right? So on the plus side, I mean, extracurriculars sound phenomenal. Work experience seems decent, but as you said, it might be a little light. But I think, you know, on some levels, it's probably going to be enough. And the reason I say that is because admissions officers tend to be a little more understanding of women who want to start business school earlier than they are, say, of men. And the reason is mostly due to family like ideas. You know, a lot of people want to be able to get the MBA, get into a really good job, and then take a break to have a family, if that's the case, you know, for this individual. So it, you know, so there are reasons. But in any event, I think there's some definite positives. You know, went to a good school for undergrad, and you know, but at the same time, the GPA is low, 3.2. So it's certainly, well, it's below the average at the top schools that she's targeting for sure, and so that's going to put some, as we said, some onus on the GMAT to really come through and shine and suggest that, you know, look, I can do well. I just, you know, maybe there are reasons for, you know, the GPA and undergrad, and maybe it was a 2.5 the first 2 years and a 3.8 in the last 2 years or something. I don't know, right? That would be a great thing to see as a kind of upward trend. So taking those classes and getting a good result on the GMAT is going to be important for this candidate. And then last but not least, I think the goals, as we said, they need to be fleshed out a bit. I understand someone wanting to go from, you know, kind of a banking related role and jump into marketing and using the MBA to do that transition. But it'd be great to know, like, is there a certain like type of marketing, or, you know, is it data driven marketing? Is it a certain sector or industry that is appealing, right? And I know I'm kind of I feel like I, you know, say this every week, but it is important to give your candidacy a unique kind of aspect by having, you know, specific career plans. So that's my take on this. And the great news is this person has a year before they need to apply almost, right? So they have plenty of time to work on the GMAT, take those outside classes, build the alternative transcript, hone their goals, etc. And so I think, you know, sky's the limit if this person, you know, does what we've just described. I would say, you know, if they could get a 750, that would go even, you know, further towards kind of balancing the 3.2. But again, I think they're going to be okay. That's my assessment. So anything else on this person, or should we move on to our final?
I think we should move on. I think this person, like you say, has the chops and the wherewithal to do very well. Got a year to sort of ramp up and get up to speed. So yeah, very good.
Excellent. So let's move on to Wiretap's candidate number 4. This person is looking to start business school next fall and is currently working in a government role. They want to return to a similar role post-MBA. I should mention this person's in Korea, in South Korea, and that they have a 690 on the GMAT, a 3.3 GPA, and 7.5 years of work experience. So a lot of work experience. And the schools that they're targeting are Georgetown McDonough, Indiana Kelly, UNC Kenan Flagler, and USC Marshall. And just for our listeners, in case they're not familiar with how things work in South Korea, there's a mandatory military service there. And so this person did a couple of years, it sounds like at least, in the military to fulfill that requirement. And then it sounds like they stayed on in some kind of government role and are looking to go back. You know, so it's just going to get the MBA, getting that U.S. experience, and then going back. They've taken the TOEFL, and they have a 101 on the TOEFL. And they mentioned that their grades in business-related subjects are above the sort of 3.3 overall GPA. So that's, you know, they do a little bit of outside activities as well. So what's your take on this candidacy? We don't see too many folks with this kind of background, you know, this much experience and kind of, yeah. So what do you think about this?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I think the basic profile of this candidate is very decent. 690 GMAT, GPA is a little bit lower, a good amount of work experience. The reason why I wanted to feature this candidacy in Wiretaps is because he does present the sort of candidacy I used to see on a number of occasions when I was an adcom at Wharton, where, you know, everything looks decent, but what's the punch? What's going to convince me that this candidate is going to be a contributing member of the classroom and of the extracurricular activities and other stuff that we're doing at the school? He's got a little bit longer experience. He knows he's going back. He says directly, I will return to government work. So whether he has an offer in hand to return or knows the pathway he's going, he's not. He could easily come to an MBA program and, you know, go to the classes, learn some stuff, and then go back home. But by doing that, he doesn't really impact the experience of others in the MBA program, which is kind of part of the job of ADCOM, is finding people that are really going to create a very energized community, so we're all learning from each other and so on and so forth. So I just wanted to share this such that candidates realize this, especially, you know, those coming from some of the international settings that might not realize it's good to have the good work experience, it's good to have the good numbers and so on and so forth, but make sure that you show some personality, make sure you show that you're the sort of person that will get involved, engage, be a leader on campus. The candidate does has some passion for tennis, maybe, or mention that, so maybe that's an avenue that they have real interest in. They could sort of do something. But whatever it is, develop that personality through your application materials.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, there were a couple of things that I wanted to call everyone's attention to. So I would like to know the verbal percentile on the 690 GMAT, because one of the principal concerns in admitting someone from South Korea or many non-English speaking, you know, countries is going to be, can they contribute in class and you know, engage in discussion and you know, be that kind of active contributor. And so because the TOEFL of 101 is, it's the 80th percentile, and it's not exactly where you would want to see it. So for example, I don't remember off the top of my head, but I'm pretty sure that, you know, the likes of like Harvard Business School have a much higher TOEFL threshold that you've got to meet. So this person may have a challenge there. And I guarantee you, if he gets interviewed, you know, if there's an optional interview or something, they're going to definitely take it for this candidate and make sure that, you know, whether it's by Skype or in person, that this person can communicate in English in an effective way. So that's something to note. I do think that, you know, working in military and government for 7.5 years, I mean, this person probably has some interesting experiences that they could bring to bear in the classroom. And so they're going to need to showcase that. I think sometimes there's, you know, candidates don't, they sort of shy away from really putting their cards on the table and telling all the interesting stories that they have to tell. So that's important. I mean, when we look at the schools that he's targeting, I mean, you know, I think it's the good news here is that for many of these schools, a 693.3 is, it's not so far afield from what their averages are. I think a lot of these schools are just a little bit higher in terms of average, but, you know, it's not like this person has said, I've got to go to Harvard or Wharton, right? So he's fishing in the right pond, I would suspect, but he's going to need to do a good job on the applications, and he's going to need to interview well in order to convince them that he's going to be a contributor. And yeah, as you said, I mean, he does mention that he, you know, has done, he's been a manager at some sort of a tennis club. And so I think there could be some material to work with here, but he's going to have to, it's going to be work to get a good application together. But again, overall interesting candidate. And, you know, I think, you know, schools like international candidates, and, you know, particularly when those candidates can add a layer of conversation to the classroom discussion, which this person could clearly do, is my guess. So, yeah, so I think he's just going to need to work on the things we've discussed. Anything else you had on this one?
No, I mean, I hate to be doom and gloom about the candidate because, like you say, for 7.5 years of experience, they've probably got some really interesting stories to tell. I think we've established that he just needs to be able to show that he's the sort of person that will be sharing those stories and being fully engaged in the extracurricular activities at the school. If he can overcome that, then I would imagine that he'll have options, especially like you say, the target schools. He's targeting top 20 schools, right? Not top 16, M7 or anything like that. So he's being very realistic.
Yeah, because the danger here is that it comes off as, you know, hey, take a 2-year vacation in America and get an MBA and then come back. You know, it's got to come across as like, oh, wow, I've really, all my life I wanted to be, you know, to kind of go somewhere out of country and study alongside an international group of diverse people. I mean, so he's going to need to work on the candidacy to get in, but it's doable. So that brings us to the end of the ApplyWire folks that we were analyzing for this week. Again, a lot is happening on the site over on LiveWire, and even now a little bit with DecisionWire as people start to make some decisions and you know reach the end of their application journey if they've applied early. So stay tuned. And as always, keep the comments coming. Please rate and review this podcast. I feel like I say that every other week on this show, but I really appreciate it when people do that. It allows us to keep producing these episodes since we're not bombarding you with ads or anything. Just spread the word. We really love for MBA candidates to know about this podcast and to tune in. So, Alex, I guess we'll see you next week. It's going to be another, there's a lot more to come. We're sort of just at the beginning phases of this year's admission cycle. So everybody, thanks for listening and stay tuned for more. Thanks, Alex.
Yes. Thank you very much, Graham. Good luck, everyone.